You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last summer, audiences fell in love with Woody Allen's romantic depictions of the City of Lights and Midnight in Paris. My next guest's latest film also focuses on a writer living in Paris, although audiences will likely think this version of Paris is downright chilling. The Woman in the Fifth follows an American novelist who's afflicted not only with writer's block, but also a distressing domestic situation, a history of illness, and a troubling love affair with a mysterious woman who has a questionable past. It opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza and Village East Cinemas, and I'm very pleased that it brings its star, Ethan Hawke, back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Now, like your character, Tom Ricks, you have written novels. Did that make it easier to get into that character?
I guess so. I feel I always love when I'm playing a part, at least for myself, if I can kind of blur the line of where the character begins and where I end. And so I don't know. I don't know what it would be like to be. It certainly makes it easier if you have some knowledge of what the experience is.
Although you've written more than one novel and he's really struggling. The film doesn't explicitly explain why he might be suffering from writer's block, but we can guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's suffering from so much. I mean, there's a kind of Kafka-esque nature to the whole movie. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think the movie is... It's funny listening to you talk about it. It sounds so depressing. But in truth, I think it is kind of a meditation on depression, in that he's suffering writer's block because he's suffering. And I think he's a person with a tremendous amount of love inside of him that's finding no outlet, not through his creativity and not through his relationships, and it's stagnating him.
Well, he's had a troubled past, but you play him very much as a sympathetic character, although his ex-wife doesn't see him that way.
Well, most ex-wives don't see it that way. I find that... The movie is very dreamy and surreal, and for me, the challenge was to try to play it as absolutely, completely naturalistically as possible.
Now, were you invited to contribute to the script?
Yeah, kind of the way, if people out there are familiar with Pavel's work, he did a movie called...
Pavel Pavlikovsky.
Exactly, and he did... My Summer of Love a few years ago, and before that he did a movie called Last Resort, both of which, if you haven't seen them, you should. They're so poetic. They're so beautiful. And he really is making the kind of movies that aren't terribly popular right now, which is that it's just full-blown cinema. Cinema not as a business, but cinema as some kind of form of expression. And the movie for him is very personal, but I think with probably any actors that he works with, he works with the reality of who you are and works with you on creating the character and the world and everything. He wants there to be as little artifice in it as possible. And so I enjoyed that process.
And you did workshops.
Yeah.
Now, you've directed films. Have you ever done a workshop before you made one of your films?
I've directed some theater, too, and I've found workshops very helpful in that regard. I have not... Pavel makes a movie differently than... I mean, I've made like 20, 30 movies or something, and this one really was its own unique experience.
Well, you were involved in extensive rehearsal when you appeared in Sidney Lumet's Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
That's true.
And
it was a different kind of rehearsal, but I mean, because Sidney used to like to... we did the whole movie beginning to end. We performed it like a play. In a tiny little warehouse with tape on the floor for the, you know, it was just Sidney and the DP. Watched Phil and Marissa and Albert and all the rest of us. We did the whole movie for him, and I'd never done that.
Well, it's because he came out of theater.
Yeah. And Pavel comes out of a different kind of cinema expression, and so he's kind of more on some kind of truth hunting. His workshops didn't really involve acting as much as they involved some kind of discussion about what the themes of the movies were. And,
well, the film draws from a number of different genres, psychological thriller, romance, ghost story perhaps, even absurdist comedy. Was that something that, I mean, you had to keep that all in balance while you were doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I mean, the balance was really for Pavel. I mean, he, you know, this is, he approached making a movie the way that I always kind of thought people would. He's so precise about everything that's in the frame, every color, every shape that's in the frame, the composition of every photograph. He approached it the way you imagine W.H. Auden would approach a sentence or something. I mean, just being aware of every syllable and letter and how they appear together. But it was not, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting the way you're describing this. People might imagine that it would start off the same way that Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris did, as a kind of pay on to Paris. Instead, he seems to have found the seediest streets possible. I didn't know there were places like that in Paris.
I think
of course, every city has them.
Right. You don't see them. And the truth is, I think what Pavel's getting at there is wherever you go, there you are. You know, you can, if you're depressed, you can go to the City of Lights and see darkness. You know, there's all these shots of him where he's actually standing like right by the Eiffel Tower, but he doesn't see the Eiffel Tower. You know, I mean, that's kind of what depression is like.
Also, this is an international production. Mm-hmm. Americans, Kristin Scott Thomas speaks French. Of course, she's British, but she speaks French.
She's British
well
and
enough
French.
To appear in French films as an all French star. There's Polish characters here as well. It's based on an American novel?
It's based on an American novel that I don't think – at the time we made the movie, the book had never come out in America. Douglas Kennedy's books are far more successful in French than they are over here.
Did you read it?
Yeah, I read it. But for Pavel, the book is very strong, but – he really had something very personal inside the book that I think appealed to him. And he left the book behind kind of months before we started shooting. It was kind of a jumping off place for a spiritual journey.
Now, you've done a lot of work in Europe, but this is the first time you've worked with a European director, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Well, I made Before Sunrise and Before Sunset, you know, in Vienna and Paris, but those are deeply Europeanly influenced films, but Rick and I are both from Texas, so.
Mm-hmm. Richard Linklater.
Yeah, yeah.
This character, Rick's, that you play, seems perpetually out of place in this environment. And this is something that someone who suddenly finds himself stuck in a city can relate to. But in his case, everything's gone wrong. He's lost his luggage right at the start. His ex-wife has a restraining order against him, seeing his kid. And he somehow has to, without a work permit, find a way to survive.
There's all these different levels of alienation. I mean, the guy can hardly see. He has his terrible vision, and he can barely speak French, and he doesn't have any money. And so, I mean, this is a human being absolutely robbed of all the tools needed to survive, and so struggles to do so.
And he wants to write another novel. He also wants to find some comfort in other people.
Right. He wants to be a father, you know. I mean, happiness comes from responsibility, right? Or at least I think it was a line once in the movie. I don't think it is anymore. But, you know, he wants to have to feel proud of himself for something, to be there for his daughter, to be there as a husband, and he's just not being allowed to do any of those things.
When you're working in a film like this where there is a certain mystery and we keep on learning new things as it goes on, if you're not shooting it in sequence, how do you keep track of things without revealing stuff?
It's just one of the hardest elements of making a movie versus doing theater. You just have to be really aware of the script, and you have to have a good director. I mean, sometimes I think when you never would pinpoint it, but a lot of times when movies don't work, it's because people got lost along the way about where they were. And, you know, a narrative is a very fragile thing about what keeps an audience interested. And this one is particularly odd. I mean, you have an unreliable narrator. The story is being told to you from the point of view of someone that you very quickly can ascertain that he may not.
He's troubled.
He's a very troubled man. He may not have a very firm grasp of reality. But that's the fun of the movie, you know.
Kristin Scott Thomas is your co-star, or one of your co-stars. You said that she embodies the very essence of cinema. What do you think of that?
Did I say that? I guess there's something about her face and the way that she speaks that when you put the camera on her, it just looks like a great film. And some people have that. And she certainly does. And I think her career is completely unique. I mean, when you think about she's had success in two languages, three countries, on Broadway and the West End. I mean, she's had a really...
She's done Broadway. But she's done American films.
That's, I mean, America, yeah. London, France, three countries, two languages.
And I saw her in a Romanian film once.
Really?
Yeah, where she spoke some Romanian.
She's a very bright woman. And, you know, I mean, even the fact that she's in this movie, I mean, it's a very odd part that she's playing. And it's not a giant role or anything, but she knows that Pavel's a serious artist. And I think she puts herself in these situations where she can be challenged, and she continues to do it. And she's one of a handful of people that you can, in my profession, that you can honestly say keeps getting better and more interesting.
How do you decide where you want to go at any given time? Because, as we said, you've written novels, you've directed films, you act in other people's films, you've directed on Broadway, you've appeared in theater as well. Is it just what plops into your lap at any given time?
It's just the hardest part about, I guess I should say the most challenging part about my life is just trying to, you know, an actor is only as good as their opportunity. And one of the things that I always struggled, I started professionally acting when I was 14. And one of the things that I really struggled with was waiting for people to give me good opportunities. And so I started writing and I started directing, not because I was unsatisfied with acting, but because... You know, the people love movies and television, and the great mass of them are incredibly stupid. I mean, you know, most of them are really...
You're not talking about the people, you're talking about the things that you appear in.
Yeah, not the people. I mean, that the shows are not terribly rewarding experiences to work on, and so you try to generate something that is actually interesting to you. And so... That's how I started doing that. And now...
Just to keep busy.
Busy. I know part of it was as simple as this, is I dropped out of college and my mother just wept and begged me to get an education. And I promised that I would. And so kind of got in the habit of trying new things to make up for that lack of an education.
Well, do you think that they all feed each other? Is the fact that you have written and directed a factor in how you play a role?
I think it helps me have respect for the writer that I'm working for. And I think I often, you know, to be totally honest with you, I worry that if I didn't disperse so much of my energy, maybe I really could have been a much better actor, you know. But I just don't think that's me. You know, and the truth is that writing has fueled my acting, and acting fuels my writing, and directing, nothing has made me want to be a better actor more than the few experiences I've had directing.
So you really don't think you're a good actor? I have to tell you this, and this is not just because you're a guest on the show, but you made a film of Hamlet some years back. You were much younger at the time, and I thought it was one of the most effective Hamlets I've ever seen.
I'm really proud of that.
Different from your traditional Hamlet, but the character really was quite clear in that version.
You know why, though? I really think it had so much...
Again, the director?
No. Well, yes. I was age-appropriate. Almost every time you see that play, you see a 40-year-old man playing Hamlet or a 38-year-old. And I was 27, 28 years old. And so all that stuff about going back to college is... very relevant. All this stuff of being so insecure around your father, that's very alive for a person in their 20s. That feels a little, I don't know, put upon when Laurence Olivier does it, you know? And so I felt very close to Hamlet when I did it, you know? And the way that Michael Almereyda created a world that was one you could really relate to. But that gets to a point that I really do think actors, you can't do a great Lear without being in a production of Lear that has something to say about King Lear. Whenever it's just a vanity piece where you see the actor kind of going through the motions, it's just so much less interesting than seeing an actor in service of something greater than themselves.
In this case, you mentioned earlier that this film is atypical today, although it wouldn't have been seen as all that atypical 15 or 20 years ago. What do you think's happened to movies? Why do you think we are not seeing this? We can't call this an art film, but it's something like an art film.
It really is. I mean, here's a great... The recent Kundera book, he kind of has a comment I'm going to butcher terribly, but the idea that I took away from it was that, you know, 100 years ago, this new art form was born. And slowly, about 50 years ago, it has been completely eaten and devoured and digested by big business. And it now doesn't even know its own name. It's so they publish how much the grosses of each movies are as if it's a competition. And the idea of using cinema as self-expression sounds pretentious. I mean, you know, people mock you if you are self-serious about that goal at all. And yet if you're not trying to do that, then what's it going to be?
With that in mind, are you going to appear in the new Avengers movie?
I'm auditioning tomorrow.
So what is your next project?
My next project is, let's see, I'm doing this fall at the Classic Stage Company, I'm going to do a production of Chekhov's Ivanov.
Oh, great.
And then at the new group in the winter, I'm going to do a new adaptation of Bertolt Brecht's first play, Baal. It's a new adaptation called Clive by Jonathan Mark Sherman. And I'm probably going to act in a movie this summer.
We've been talking about Pavel Pavlikovsky's new film called The Woman in the Fifth, which opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza and Village East Cinemas. My great thanks to Ethan Hawke for stopping by again.
Well, thank you for having me.